Time now for the Talk of the Nation opinion page. As candidate and as president, Barack Obama pledges to overturn the controversial Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy toward gays in the military, though the administration recently admitted it's not a top priority item, given all the other challenges. A few months ago, after a group of retired generals and admirals published an op-ed and an open letter that called for the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, we heard from one of their number. Today, after an op-ed and an open letter on the other side, we hear from retired Admiral Jerome Johnson. He finished a 38 career in the United States Navy as Vice Chief of Naval Operations. The op-ed in the Washington Post was titled Gays and the Military, a Bad Fit. We'd especially like to hear from those of you who are current and former members of the military. 800-989-8255 is the phone number. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. Go to npr.org, click on Talk of the Nation. Admiral Johnson joins us from the studios of member station WGCU in Fort Myers, Florida, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Well, good afternoon, Neil. Nice to be with you. Thank you.
And if Don't Ask, Don't Tell is to be repealed, Congress would have to change a law called Section 654 of U.S. Code Title 10, which makes it illegal for gays to serve in the military. And that law, that section of U.S. Code 10, that's what you wanted to preserve. Is that correct?
That's correct. I had the pleasure and the opportunity to work with Admiral Tom Moore, who was the retired chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff back in 1992 and 1993. The Congress voted at that time for statutory language that affirmed almost word for word longstanding regulations stating that homosexuality was incompatible with military service. And then both houses passed the law with bipartisan veto-proof majorities, and subsequently federal courts have upheld its constitutionality several times. So we felt like we did a good job back in 93. And we felt like Congress supported us with the, as you suggested, Section 654. Now, recently the issue has become Representative Ellen Tosher from California has introduced H.R. 1283, which would repeal that law. And so that was the reason why so many of us who are retired general and flag officers signed a letter to President Obama and wrote the op-ed piece.
And why is it that you think some people would argue times have changed, even since 1993, it's been a while, and that society is a lot more tolerant of homosexuality in many different respects, and that indeed let me take all that back. Admiral, reading your piece, it suggests that you don't think there are homosexuals in the military now.
Well, undoubtedly there are, but we believe we're involved in two wars right now, and we simply believe that imposing this burden on our men and women in uniform would undermine recruiting, retention, it would impact leadership at all levels, and ultimately have an adverse effect on the willingness of parents who want to lend their children to our military for service or suggest that they enter service, and eventually all of these dynamics flow that it could really impact on that readiness retention factor. So that means we have an all-volunteer force, and then people are going to be reluctant to come in if they have to impose this cultural change in our military organization. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and I will anticipate some of our callers who said a lot of people might have made the very same argument in 1947 before President Truman ordered that the armed forces accept blacks and stop discrimination.
Well, I think the military demonstrated that it was a classic case. I think it is a model for our racial minorities and how we've integrated so forcefully, imposing zero tolerance. And that's another factor that perhaps would be the outgrowth if you repeal this law and force it into zero tolerance. Let's look at what the military is thinking about that, though. For the last 4 years, the Military Times have conducted polls of our active duty personnel and their subscribers. And during that four-year period, 58% of the respondents suggested that they would be opposed to repeal the law. So as a matter of fact, in 2008, that poll continued and respondents suggested 10% of them would not join the service and as many as 14% would terminate their careers. So if you want to look at gross numbers, what that might represent, as many as 228,000 people would terminate their careers. That would be a terrible and dramatic impact on our warfighting capability and the readiness.
How many careers have been impacted and ended because people were gay or lesbian?
That is a very, very small number. We've had more people who have been terminated for other factors, conduct, wage standards, just the inability to serve. So those that have left the service because of homosexual behavior is a very small number, not a very dramatic impact at all.
Get some listeners in the conversation. Our guest is retired Admiral Jerome Johnson, a former Vice Chief of Naval Operations, representative of a group of over 1,000 retired generals and admirals who wrote an open letter to President Barack Obama, and subsequently three of them wrote an op-ed that was published in the Washington Post called Gays and the Military a Bad Fit. 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Meredith is in the line. Meredith calling us from San Antonio.
Hi, Admiral Neil. I love the show. I listen every day.
Thank you.
With all due respect to you, sir, I disagree with your stance as someone who was in the military. I received two commendation medals, both for wars in Operation Iraqi Freedom, and also I served in Afghanistan and Pakistan. I served proudly, and all because someone found a picture of a life that I had before I was even in the military, I was forced out. And I don't think that that was fair. And I know that I did my job 50% better than anybody, as I was promoted 6 months above my peers. And I served my country proudly, and I joined for all the right reasons. I constantly heard people complaining in the military, why am I here? This is ridiculous. Why are we even here? I didn't join for this. I joined for the school money. I joined to serve my country, and they kicked me out. And I think that that was the wrong idea. And they spent a lot of time and money training me and a lot of time and money training other people who were kicked out for the same reason. And I think that that is a misuse of appropriations and federal money. And that's just my comment.
Okay. Meredith,
well, I would respond that thank you very much for your service, and we appreciate that. But something about the current law that recognizes the military as a specialized society, it's fundamentally different from civilian life. And you've probably found in your experience that you were forced into intimate situations, living in close quarters and confined quarters. There's an extraordinary amount of sacrifices demanded of our military people, and one of them would be the living conditions, where we just have to put people in small berthing compartments or barracks. I appreciate the fact that you were able to serve honorably, and thank you for that. And I would repeat myself by just suggesting that there's only a small minority of our people who have been released from active duty because of homosexual behavior.
With all due respect to you, Admiral, I understand that you believe that to be true, but I happen to know there are a lot of people on active duty who are gay and lesbian. And as far as living conditions in combat zones, it just never entered your mind. It never entered. It was never, ever a factor. Everybody knew I was a lesbian, even on post in Pakistan and Afghanistan. It was never, ever a factor. It never entered into anybody's mind. When you're in that situation, when you're in that combat zone, your mind just thinks automatically survival. And nobody was even thinking about, oh my God, she's gay. It didn't even enter into anyone's mind.
Meredith,
I think that is a ridiculous comment to make.
Meredith, we want to give somebody else a chance, but thanks very
Absolutely.
Much for the phone call.
Thank you, Neil.
Appreciate it. Let's see if we can go now to John, and John's with us from San Francisco.
Well, hi, Neil. Great show as always. Just one real quick remark. I was active duty for many, many years. I was the U.S. Army. I was an NCO. One thing that the folks that want to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell don't understand is that there are 1,000 scenarios that could entangle commanders of the UCMJ. I'll just give you one real quick.
That's the Uniform Code of Military Justice, but go ahead.
Yeah, Roger. Supposing an openly gay NCO chastises a junior enlisted, a private, and then sometime later the private goes to the chain of command and says, well, you know, Sergeant so-and-so sexually harassed me or sexually assaulted me. And these kind of cloak and dagger things that go on behind the scenes, folks that have never served in the military don't understand there's a lot of those kind of things going on. A lot of folks think it's just as simple, well, just give gays their rights. See, Don't Ask, Don't Tell, it obliges gays and lesbians to be discreet, and discretion, I think, is the operative word here. And as it is now, I think it works well. I mean, a lot of us, as the previous caller said, knew gays and lesbians. However, they were forced, as I said, to keep that, keep a lid on that. And anyway, I just want to ask you to consider and ask the country to consider. There are a lot of other implications associated with this. And thanks again for the show.
Okay, John. Thanks very much for the call.
Right.
Neil, could I suggest the people perhaps don't understand, don't ask, don't tell, because that's commonly mislabeled. Don't ask, don't tell is an administrative policy. But Section 654 in Title 10 is not don't ask, don't tell. It is absolutely a prohibition against homosexual serving. So there can be a little bit of confusion when people talk about both of those issues, and they're not interchangeable. Perhaps some of the debate should be, Congress should debate the question, would repeal of the law improve, or would it undermine discipline, morale, and overall readiness? How would it improve readiness? I guess is one of the criteria that I would use when we know that we have a very successful fighting force.
Oh, I understand it, but is that the only criterion? How it affects readiness at this particular moment? If it negatively affects readiness for 6 months, but improves it a year down the road, would that be okay?
Well, I think I mentioned the three R's. For us, it affects recruiting. It affects retention, and it affects readiness, all of those factors. And we have to consider all of those in a well-balanced force. For instance, if parents are unlikely to recommend that their children go into the service, we lose the opportunity to recruit some very fine, outstanding people. There is no right to serve in the all-volunteer force. It's not a constitutional right. There are physical standards. There are educational standards that must be demonstrated before a volunteer is accepted into the military. The training is intense. The sacrifices are many and significant. And we know from the experiences of some other people have usually said, well, some other services are taking homosexuals, but many times they're prohibited from serving in elite units, and many times they are denied promotion. And in other services, they may not be able to participate in confidential or secure situations where they need intelligence information. So there's some restrictions on their service, and we don't have to impose some of those litmus standards and discriminate our military.
You don't, because people can be their careers could be ruined by simply being outed. Those people aren't security risks.
No, I just suggested to you. Sometimes
it's going to cut both ways, though, isn't it? You have people who are security risks now if their careers could be lost by being outed. Correct.
Let me go back to what I said. People
yes
use
or no.
as an example from other services, other nations, Denmark, Netherlands, Canada, and sometimes that's used as an example of where homosexuals serve, and perhaps but the U.S. military is a model for their services, not that they are models for ours. And I only implied that in those other services in other nations, there are frequently imposed some restrictions on what the homosexual people can serve in and what type of services they can perform.
We're talking with retired Admiral Jerome Johnson, one of more than 1,000 retired generals and admirals who wrote an open letter to President Barack Obama urging that he retain the law, that he urged Congress to retain the law that makes it illegal for gays to serve in the military. You're listening to the Opinion Page on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can go now to this is Toby. Toby with us from Durham, North Carolina.
Hi, Neil. Great show, as usual. I'm just shocked that we're even still having this debate. It's just so sad that this has gone on as long as it has, and it's just another example of sexual discrimination. And I think that people that support that feel that this should go on are going to be written down in history as homophobes.
As homophobes. Here's an interesting email also we got along those lines from Laura in Pinehurst, North Carolina. I think the admiral's wrong. I'm a former Army officer. I know I served with gay service members, even leaders, and it did not impact our unit. Only competence is what impacts leadership. In Korea, I lived in quarters that actually had a co-ed bathroom. We were mature enough to manage that. It's time for us to get over this homophobia. Is it, Admiral Johnson, homophobia?
I would suggest it is not. I think with over 1,000 senior military officers signing that letter to Congress and to the president, we once again analyzed our own experiences, looked at what we had experienced in command and command situations and the demands on our people, and thought what was best for our people is that we continue to serve a military service that is actually recruiting the best of the best. To this day, we have the best fighting force, or the best trained, and we don't need to impact our readiness by going back in these zero tolerance reviews, going back to retroactively imposed non-discriminatory policies on the service. Think what an additional demand this is going to be on our leadership at a time when we're preparing and fighting wars. So it's I think it's a great deal of tension and stress added on already a difficult situation that we simply don't need. I don't see how there can be any improvement in our readiness if we went to that posture.
And let me get back to where we started, and thanks very much for the call, Toby. But why is this different from 1947 when the Army was ordered to desegregate?
Well, I think that we've demonstrated how quickly we could
Everybody
our
accepts
services.
The military is an absolute model of how to do that correctly. Why could
yes.
it not be a model for this?
I think that because you're imposing a change on a culture that's very traditional in that nature, and that it is a completely different factor.
And some people would say, wait a minute, if you can overcome racism, you can overcome what some people would regard as homophobia.
Well, we just simply think that it's inappropriate to impose this on our military culture at this time. We simply think that it's a specialized society that we're dealing with, and it takes special people that can tie into the unit cohesiveness, that maintain their morale in their very difficult circumstances, where they're relying on the training and the demonstration that they're working with people that have their own focus on what's best for the command or the greater cause.
Admiral Johnson, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Retired Admiral Jerome Johnson, former Vice Chair of Naval Operations, joined us from the studios of member station WGCU in Fort Myers, Florida. You can find a link to the op-ed piece he and others wrote for The Washington Post called Gays and the Military, a Bad Fit, at npr.org/talk. Tomorrow in this hour, do we still need the Voting Rights Act? The Supreme Court weighs in on that question soon. And to make sure you never miss another show, sign up for our email newsletter, find out what's coming up and how to be included in the program. Go to npr.org/email and click on the box next to Talk of the Nation. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.